Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International, in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
Good morning, everyone. A discussion now of some milestones in the energy economy. Michael Moyer is here, editor of Scientific American. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning.
How are you feeling?
Feeling great.
We asked you here to talk about peak oil, which may be the next big milestone. But first, Michael, can you sit for a second?
Love to.
We've got a birthday to celebrate. It may be a party for some folks, Venezuelans, Saudis, of course, celebrities from Dubai, no doubt, but the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, OPEC, has a birthday. Turns 50 years old today. 50 years ago in Baghdad, Iraq, Iran, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, and Venezuela started OPEC. Hard to imagine that I am older than the largest energy cartel in world history, but there you go. Seems like OPEC has always been around, though. In fact, when I was growing up, just about the time the evil Soviets were losing their luster, by the late 1960s, the idea that the Russians could really hurt Americans was kind of wearing off. The whole nuclear threat seemed like a bluff. Yeah, long before there was Ayatollah Khomeini, Osama bin Laden, Al-Qaeda, or any of the fearsome enemies little kids learn to fear today, there was OPEC.
Good evening. Tonight I want to have an unpleasant talk with you about a problem that's unprecedented in our history.
The oil-producing countries of the Arab world decided to use their oil as a political weapon. They will reduce oil production by 5% a month until the Israelis withdraw from occupied territories.
When in the 1970s OPEC used its weapon to push oil prices above $12 a barrel, ooh, American consumers felt the sting. And energy independence and confronting OPEC has been a theme of American politics ever since.
We will break the back of the energy crisis. We will lay the foundation for our future capacity to meet America's energy needs from America's own resources.
In 2.5 years, we will be twice as vulnerable to a foreign oil embargo as we were 2 winters ago.
Domestic production has been dropping steadily at about 6% a year. Imports have doubled in the last 5 years. And our nation's economic and political independence is becoming increasingly vulnerable.
Presidents Nixon, Ford, and Carter. At a time when the leader of Iran, Shah Reza Pahlavi, lectured the West about its energy habits.
I am ready, as far as my country is concerned, to take that chance and that responsibility, to go along with you, to give you a spell, to give you a break. Mm-hmm. Provided you also take the necessary measures and steps for conservation and finding new sources of energy.
Angst about OPEC subsided during the mid and late 70s, though, as prices started to drop. In 1975, Carlos, the notorious terrorist, kidnapped OPEC officials at OPEC headquarters in Vienna. Here's Saudi oil minister and OPEC leader Zaki Yamani.
It was a result of the Saudi policy to stop prices from going up. And I was told that I will be killed because I am an instrument to stop the price from going up.
In the early 80s, OPEC created a deal to maintain prices in the low 30s, a deal which was much reviled, but which achieved a kind of security. OPEC got rich, oil companies got rich, U.S. companies got rich. Conspiracy theorists, well-founded and otherwise, had plenty to say. Here's Professor Noam Chomsky on how the U.S. benefited from OPEC.
You know, the U.S. was actually running a positive trade balance with Saudi Arabia after the price went up because they figured out ways of getting the Arab facade to recycle the profits. That's why there was such a huge armaments flow to the oil-producing countries. Mostly comes back here.
By the 1990s, there was no more Shah. There were many more members of OPEC, though, and the price started to drop, reaching a low of $10 a barrel back in 1997. OPEC's clout was at an all-time low. The cartel, it seemed, was on the ropes. But with the internet bubble bursting, 9/11, the U.S. war fronts opening in Afghanistan and Iraq, and the emergence of China and India as huge users of oil, the price began to move up again. The spike in oil prices during the end of the Bush years hit a record of more than $147 a barrel. The angst about OPEC returned. The White House returned to some old themes.
I would hope, as OPEC considers different production levels, that they understand that if they're one of their biggest consumers, this economy suffers, it'll mean less purchases, less oil and gas sold.
Climate change and our dependence on foreign oil, if left unaddressed, will continue to weaken our economy and threaten our national security.
So at age 50, OPEC is as rich and as strong as ever. In the words of politicians and pundits, still very much the enemy.
They laugh at the stupidity of our country.
OPEC keeps the price high.
And you're dealing with an oligopoly in the cartel of OPEC.
Keeps the price high in order to make as much money as possible off of us.
Illegal situation.
Does it not disturb anyone?
You have to do something about OPEC.
Today, the OPEC price of oil is close to the market price, hovering near $75 a barrel, which on its 50th birthday, one OPEC official told Reuters the cartel considers ideal. Happy birthday, OPEC. It's been great. So OPEC turns 50. We know exactly when OPEC was formed. Michael Moyer, editor at Scientific American. Are we going to see peak oil coming?
Well, it may have already come, and we didn't know it. It's a matter of intense debate in the energy community as to when the exact date of peak oil will be. Some people believe it happened maybe a few years ago. Some people think it's happening right now or maybe in a few years. But that just goes to show that the debate over peak oil is a very fuzzy one, and we may not necessarily see the effects of peak oil for a number of years, perhaps decades.
And peak oil is simply, we can't grow anymore. It's going to decline from here on out, slowly or quickly.
We won't be able to get any more than we've been getting out of it. The amount of oil we've been getting out of the ground has been growing over the decades, and that growth will stop.
Michael Moyer, you write that the existence of OPEC, oddly enough, makes it harder to see what the real production levels are right now. How does that work?
Well, OPEC is not a very transparent organization, and there is a motivation to kind of keep the knowledge of what we will be able to get out of the ground out of everyone's eyes. So right now, you can go through and kind of look well by well and oil field by oil field and try and tally up, you know, what we've been producing and how much is left and how much we're going to be able to get out of the ground. But it's still extremely difficult to be able to make that calculation of when peak oil is. And peak oil, also, I want to clarify, is also approximately when we've gotten about half of the amount of oil out of the ground.
Right. It's past the point of no return if you were nautically, if you were at sea or something
like
that.
Yeah, but it also means that it's not like suddenly once peak oil happens, oil will go away. It just means that, you know, the clock is ticking and we better find some alternative soon.
How much of the impact of peak oil is purely in terms of production or the cost of actually getting the oil out of the ground, and how much of it is purely psychological?
Well, yeah, that's the thing, is a lot of people say, oh, well, peak oil, you're talking about the stuff that we know about, the stuff that's easy to get, so-called easy to get. As oil becomes more scarce and more expensive, people will be motivated to go to ever greater lengths in order to pull oil out of the ground, and you see that happening, for instance, in the Gulf of Mexico with the deep wells that are happening there. The tar sands of Canada is an oft-discussed source of oil that is now untapped, and it's very dirty and very expensive to get at it, but if oil were to suddenly go above $100, $150 a barrel again, then suddenly that makes economic sense.
You know, the oil industry, the fossil fuel industry, using petroleum mined from the ground is barely a century old. I mean, it's a little over a century old. But it's going to be with us, even in a time of decline, for perhaps longer than a century, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. The reason why oil and gasoline is so important is because gasoline can carry a lot of energy in a very small amount of space. And we haven't found a way to be able to replace that kind of energy density anywhere, which is why it's so important in our transportation infrastructure. If we were to be able to create, say, batteries, which were able to have the same amount of energy, carry the same amount of energy as a gallon of gasoline, now that would change things.
That's a way of thinking about it. You take a gallon of gasoline, put it in a bottle, pick it up, feel the heft of that. You can imagine a battery. that could drive a car for as long as that gallon of gas, and if you got a decent car, it could be, you know, 30, 40, 50 miles per gallon, then you're beginning to see what the implications are of getting off of fossil fuel. That's the science in it.
And that's the challenge of it, because we're not even close to that way yet, and we don't really know how to get there.
Michael Moyer, editor of Scientific American, talking about peak oil on OPEC's 50th birthday. A happy day or not, depending on your proclivity.
Well, it's a political cartel. Some of the clips you had was calling it an oligopoly. I'm all for transparency in the markets, and so I don't have a cake.
Thanks for being with us, Michael Moyer.
Thank you.